Direct Connection is made by MPT to serve all of our diverse communities and is made possible by the generous support of our members. Thank you. Live from Maryland Public Television, this is Direct Connection with Jeff Salkin.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for tuning in for Direct Connection. It has been a busy few months at Maryland's flagship university. Most recently, a new basketball coach. Before that, a new football coach and a new athletic director. And before that, a new leader of the school. Joining us tonight is that leader, the president of the University of Maryland College Park, Dr. Wallace Low. Dr. Low, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff, for inviting me.
We have so much to talk about. But to begin with, as a new academic leader of the school, did you think you'd be spending this much time on the athletic department?
Well, to hire a new athletic director and be involved in the hiring of a basketball coach and a football coach in the first 5.5 months is perhaps not common.
But it is all related to the reputation, the visibility of the university.
Oh, absolutely. The reason athletics are so important is because they're the front porch of a university. And the front porch is the most visible part of the academic house. So what happens on the front porch affects how people might perceive the inside of the house.
And we see stories of lesser-known institutions that maybe, you know, make the Final Four or the Sweet 16 in basketball, and their applications take off, and that leads to them being more selective and potentially raising their rankings. It's an amazing thing.
It is. And when Gary Williams won the national championship, our applications soared. And he has taken the university to a new level in terms of basketball, and our applications have remained very high. And of course, it has to do with the quality of our programs, but the two are related.
What did you first think when you found out that Gary Williams was thinking about retiring after you had already dealt with the new football coach, the new athletic director?
Well, I was glad I came in November so I could see him coach and get to know him a little bit. It's the end of an era. He has taken a program that was in the valley, lifted it and carried it up to the top of the mountain and kept it close to or at the mountaintop. And for that, we're very grateful because he represents the best of the Terps. It's not just his success on the court, but also his values, putting students first and representing very well the university and always, always playing by the rules.
Talk about the money involved in this. We don't know exact salaries for the new head coaches, but we can sort of guess the ballpark. I heard on the radio today they're talking to an assistant basketball coach at another school who's apparently making close to $500,000 a year. Do you have any trouble with those numbers at a time when budgets are tight, tuition's going up, and some financial aid programs are being scaled back?
Well, those aren't large salaries. On the other hand, they also, when the programs are successful, they can bring in considerable amount of revenue. But the most important thing to remember is that the athletic department budget, the salaries for all the coaches, head coaches, assistant coaches, all operations, is entirely self-sustaining. There's not $1 of public funds.
Well, let's talk about the academic part of your job. What's your goal? What is your ambition for the University of Maryland?
Well, I feel blessed to be the president of one of the great public research universities in the country. In fact, I think I'm blessed in having the best job in American higher education, simply because the University of Maryland is ranked so highly, and its rise over the past 15 or so years is really meteoric. Very few public research universities have risen that quickly, that dramatically, in terms of stature and impact. And so my primary goal is to maintain that upward momentum of the university as an academic and as a research institution.
Do you look at the college rankings that come out from various sources that have Maryland, yes, highly rated, highly ranked, but with the potential to go higher, and how do you make that happen?
Well, we're very proud of the fact that a few months ago, Kiplinger Magazine ranked the University of Maryland number 5 in the nation among all public colleges and universities in terms of its quality and its affordability. And we need to thank the governor and the Maryland General Assembly for supporting the university and keeping it affordable. So yes, whereas these are institutional beauty contests, one shouldn't put too much weight on them. Nonetheless, they give you a rough indicator of how we stack up against the rest of the country.
Let me remind our viewers, if you have a question about the University of Maryland, the future of that school, you can give us a call at the number on the screen or email us by visiting our website at mpt.org. I took a look at the text of your inaugural address, which was just a few weeks ago. One line caught my eye. You said that the state of Maryland is the second leading exporter of college talent. What does that mean?
That means that many of the best students, the most high-achieving students from high schools in Maryland, leave the state. And over the past 15 years, one of the reasons why we have risen so dramatically is that we've managed to retain more of the high-achieving high school graduates of Maryland in the state. We want to keep the best students in the state of Maryland because where they go to college affects where they will eventually, upon graduation, live and work. So we're now up to 25% of the best students of Maryland, high school graduates, staying in Maryland at the University of Maryland. And our goal is to raise that number to one-third.
How do you do that?
By doing what we've been doing, which is providing an outstanding education, fantastic academic programs at an affordable cost.
So why do you think so many of the best students go elsewhere now? And is there one main factor, or are there a bunch of little factors that might make them reconsider College Park?
Well, some proportion will always go out of state. My daughter, when she went to college, wanted to be as far away from her parents as possible.
I've heard of that, yes.
But then on the other hand, also, it's the kinds of programs that you offer. And so we have all sorts of living learning programs where students live together, they study together, they have a common theme. We have incredible research programs that students can be involved in. We have exciting athletics. It all forms a very good package, top rate, and yet affordable. So I am confident that the numbers of top achieving students in Maryland will continue to come to the University of Maryland.
You talked about your agenda in this speech, and one of the points was innovation. Explain what you have in mind.
Innovation is about doing things differently and doing things better. It's about not just generating new knowledge or doing exciting research, but to translate that into new products, new processes, to create new companies, generate new wealth, and create new jobs. And the University of Maryland is doing that. I think people would be interested to know that for every $1 of state-funded compensation to faculty, the faculty generate $3 in research funding. And for every $1 that we get from the state, we generate $8 in economic activities. So we are a $3.6 billion economic engine. We want to take it up to the next level. We want the University of Maryland to be a major catalyst for the creation of new companies and the creation of jobs in the state of Maryland by relying on innovation and entrepreneurship.
I know there's a new Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship opening up. Talk a little about the tension in the academic world. So you were a PhD as well as a law school graduate, between research-oriented professors who may not be that interested in commercializing their innovations and the university and the private sector that certainly are.
Well, research, basic research, expanding the sum total of human knowledge is a key priority of a university. And no faculty member should be compelled to applied research. But at the same time, there's enormous opportunity in terms of taking that research and translating it into new products and processes. And it doesn't have to be the faculty member himself or herself who does that. There are other people who can support them in doing it. And that's why we hope to have a one-stop concierge service to translate the results of research and creative work into new jobs and new opportunities that will revitalize and enhance the economy of the state of Maryland.
What's the talk, and I believe there's a formal study, about combining the University of Maryland? There actually, as I understand it, there are two institutions in the university system of Maryland that can call themselves the University of Maryland and hand out degrees that say University of Maryland. And that's you at College Park and the University of Maryland at Baltimore, which is the medical school, the law school, dental, pharmacy, right, and basically the professional schools. So there's this discussion about merging the institutions. How do you see that?
Well, there was a request in the appropriations budget that this issue of merger of College Park and Baltimore be studied and a report be made at the end of middle of December. And that charge was to the Board of Regents to do the study. And of course, I'm very, very supportive, and I'll do whatever I can to be supportive of the regents in their study.
What would it mean? I mean, obviously the two schools are 20, 30 miles apart, whatever it is, and you're not going to physically merge the two institutions. So is it just combining an umbrella of leadership over the two institutions so that you can say the amount of research money we do is X plus Y, mm-hmm, and look bigger, or is there more to it?
Well, I think we live, as Tom Friedman has said, in a flat world, where because of technology, there's movement of people and ideas, not just across 30 miles, but across the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean. And so the 21st century is all about overcoming barriers. Academic barriers, organizational barriers, national barriers. And the goal is to see if one can bring together the resources of both institutions, whatever you call it, merge or whatever, to take it up to the next level in terms of education and in terms of research, so that it creates greater benefits for the students as well as for the state.
Let's take a phone call. Margo in Prince George's County. Margo, thank you for calling, and go ahead.
Yes, sir. I got a question. How is it that the University of Maryland receives money out of the state, basically out of the taxpayers' money, but sets a bar where if you don't have a 3.0 or I forgot if it's like
GPA?
Yes.
Right.
And you have to have a 3.0 or above to be able to join the university. I don't think if you're taking taxpayers' money, you should set such a bar.
Marco, thank you for the call.
Thank you, sir.
What would you say to good students out there who maybe fall short of the standards at College Park?
Well, there is no automatic cutoff. We look at the whole person. We look at their grade point average. We look at their test scores. We look at their service activities. We look at their economic circumstances. We look at the whole package. But the reality is that over the past 15 years, the reason we are now ranked among the top 20 research universities, public research universities in the country, is precisely because more and more of the highest achieving students from Maryland want to come to College Park. So the median GPA of a freshman is 3.9. The median SAT score is in the 1300s. Those are very, very high credentials. Not everyone has them, but on average, that's what it is. And it's a reflection of the talent that exists in the state of Maryland.
I think you pointed out in your inaugural address that given the standards at the time, you might have been able to get into Maryland as an undergraduate, but probably not today.
No, I probably would not be admitted. I'm just happy that the standards for hiring a new president are not as high as the standards for admitting freshmen.
Yeah. How do you feel about the just the whole competition between your school and similar schools for the top talent? A lot of resources are expended on recruiting those kids and then turning away many of them. The students themselves, as you know, I'm sure, with a child in college, apply to countless universities these days, which makes it even harder to get an acceptance. It's a bit of a rat race going on.
Well, it's a competitive environment, not just for college admissions. It's competitive for going to business, for into careers, and so forth. And I think we owe it to the state of Maryland to carefully look at every application, not just go by the numbers, even though on average the numbers are very high, and bring in the most talented students. And we want to keep the very talented graduates in Maryland so that they live and work here and contribute to the economy.
Let's talk about your story for a moment. You talked before about overcoming barriers. You, the short version, were born in China, grew up in South America, and moved by yourself to the United States, I read, at age 15. How did that happen, and why are you here?
I got on a plane and arrived in this country. And
let me ask what happened before that. Why did you get on that plane?
Because there was not much opportunity where I was growing up. And so my parents said, if you want to realize your dreams, go to America. And here's $300. Here are the life savings that we have. And they said, this is the country of opportunity. You work hard and you persevere. You can realize your dreams. That's why I came to this country.
You were 15 and a high school graduate.
That's correct.
How did you decide to go, where in the vast United States you wanted to go?
I didn't speak English. I did not know about American higher education. I went to the U.S. Embassy and there were only three college catalogs. And so that's how I decided where to apply. And it turns out that the first two college catalogs were for women's colleges. And so he said to me, thank you for your interest, but we can't admit you. And the third college was in Iowa. And they said, we're thrilled to have you. And here's a small scholarship. And you have to work, 10 hours a week, washing pots and pans, and they'll buy you one dinner. And we can help you get jobs as a janitor and sweeping the snow and so on and so forth. I'll pay for part of your room. And the rest you have to handle on your own.
But what were those first couple of years like?
I was thrilled to be here. The opportunities are enormous. And I'm just very grateful that I was able to come to this country. And I think that experience I've had shapes my view of higher education today. That's why I'm committed to public higher education. I'm committed to expanding educational opportunities for everyone. But I'm also very committed to academic excellence and to quality.
That must also inform your view of the legislative debate over tuition rates for illegal immigrants. So the legislature approved in-state tuition for some immigrants who are undocumented at some colleges, so starting at community colleges. Sure. And then potentially transferring. And that's been very controversial. How do you see it?
Well, there are a lot of requirements imposed upon them that they must have completed 2 years of community college. They must have graduated from a high school in Maryland and spent at least 3 years. Their parents or their guardians must be paying Maryland state income tax. And these are kids who came here as children. And the reality is they're here unless we're going to deport millions of these kids, they're going to be with us. And so they have to meet all the same standards for admission, and they're coming in as juniors.
And you think there's maybe another college president in the making out there?
I'm sure there are. And the only reason I tell my story is that if I can make it, if I can come here and make it, so can you. Because it is the story of about the American dream. And American higher education is the key to unlocking the American dream for millions and billions of people in this country.
Let's take another phone call. Richard in Harford County. Richard, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. What do you estimate, as far as on the affordability index, as a percentage of the median wage, in Maryland or a country or the United States, of what a four-year degree in Maryland, would be as a percentage of the median income in the next 5 years?
Richard, thank you very much. I don't know if you know those numbers off the top of your head, but if I can broaden the question a little bit. Mm-hmm. overall, higher education costs have been going up faster than inflation for a long period of time.
Sure.
Why is that? Other industries are finding ways to become more efficient and use more technology, do more with less. And in, frankly, the academic world, we see colleges doing the same, it looks like, with more.
Well, I think it's important to point out that for the past 4 years, tuition has been kept flat. That was the commitment made.